From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 29th day of August, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at agmarket.net. Mark Russo will help us take a look at the weather forecast across the Midwest and other parts of the world. He's with Everstream Analytics, and we'll do that right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn today at $6.83¾, up 15 cents. December at $6.83, 18 and three quarters higher. In the March, up 18 cents at $6.87¾. September soybeans down 70 and a half cents, $15.34¾, the settlement price there. The November at $14.37¾, 23 and a half lower. And January at $14.43, down 22 and a half. Since bean meal up 30 cents, that is, at $478.40, and the bean oil at $70.98, 16 cents higher. Soft red winter wheat in the September up 35 and a quarter, $8.20 the settlement price, and the hard red at $9.12½, up 29 and a quarter. Live cattle futures finished the lead option down 15 in the October at 142.90, feeders at 181.75, down $2.32½, and lean hogs at $92.25 per 100 pounds, $1.60 higher. Crude oil up $4.19 a barrel. Diesel fuel, 7.5 cents lower. Gasoline up 4.5 cents. That's at $2.72¼. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average for the day is down 114 points at 32,149. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at agmarket.net in Normal, Illinois, to discuss what happened in Chicago. Was this a final reaction to the national numbers as released by Pro Farmer on Friday?
I think it's a combination of several moving parts. Yes, definitely Pro Farmer's yield estimate caught the trade by surprise, and it's kind of a wake-up call. If you would happen to use their math involved in this, it basically it's going to be a shortfall of about 600 million bushels. So that's going to tighten the supply-demand balance sheet up quite a bit here if demand would remain, you know, fairly stout. So that put the urgency, put a little weather premium into it. But I think the other supportive feature was the wheat market. Wheat finished the day 35, 37 cents higher in Chicago, and several factors. Fundamentally, there's some speculation that Russia will not extend the Ukraine deal, that export corridor. And I believe that expires in October. So even though we've shipped some grain out of that region, mainly corn, that could be, you know, a question mark as we move forward. Wheat harvest is wrapped up, so that wheat's either been moved or put in some storage here over the near term. Probably the thing that helped sparked the news to get it to go up. But the thing is, I think the commodity funds was kind of watching these moving averages. Chart-wise, we've been consolidating sideways here for about a month, 2 months. We've got a sloppy head and shoulders bottom. So we kind of broke out to the upside here, and the computers put the buy green light on here as the green line went above the red line. And we saw quite a bit of buying interest with the commodity funds leading the charge higher, buying about 7,000 contracts of corn, about 8,000 contracts a week.
What are the expectations for this afternoon's weekly crop progress? These mean a little less as we get closer to harvest, but still rather important. They've been trending lower, especially for the corn numbers.
Yeah, seasonally in through here, as the crop starts to shut down, we're going to fall. The conditions do drop. This afternoon's estimate on corn, good to excellent, 54% versus 55% last week. Soybeans, 56% good to excellent versus 57% a week ago. We'll kind of keep an eye, you know, the state by state. Most have been watching Iowa here. When you watch the bigger states and on how they're doing there. But to get the average to reverse and go back up, it's going to be a tough chore as we move forward in through here. I think once we get these numbers digested from Pro Farmer, and we're in a situation now where it's going to be hurry up and wait and kind of see what the September observations show us.
What'd you make of the losses in the September soybean market?
Just the fact that follow through from Pro Farmer, they're confirming a potential of a decent bean crop. Actually, they had a little smaller yield, but when you look at harvested acres and so forth, the 4 million extra bushels just says we've got plenty around. There's that potential for a record bean production here in the U.S. And there's production in the southern hemisphere. It's going to be watched fairly closely here. That 2023 Brazilian bean crop, Colm's talking about 150 million metric tons. The USDA is 149 versus 126 here last year. So this, the prospects of some higher production numbers, plenty of supply around here this fall, has the trade buying wheat, buying corn, selling beans on the spread today.
Does this mean that farmers should go ahead, especially if they're in areas that now probably believe they will have an awfully good soybean crop, should make new crop sales?
Well, there's that frost, so once we get past that, I think we got to find something in through here. But no, I think as a producer, we're moving from a supply-driven market to a demand-driven market. So the supply numbers are getting fairly well dialed in. And so producers should start to be comfortable with what they have coming out of the field, barring no disaster, you know, wind, frost, or whatever, for the most part. But the main thing is got to kind of have a plan here going in the fall. The most popular saying is, should I store or should I sell? And for those that have commercial storage, if these storage rates go up somewhat, maybe convert those to some cash sales. The other thing to keep in mind, not only the cost of storage, but if you look at the price of the futures, you got December corn 683, July corn 683. There's virtually no carry in the marketplace in corn. Soybeans, the Novembers are 1437, the July's 1442. You're talking 5 cents carry. And with higher interest rates and bills to pay and so forth, I wouldn't be supposed to moving some grain here this fall, replacing the deferred, and kind of see what happens as we go into 2023.
The market is telling producers to reward it. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand at willag.org, or search us out in your favorite podcast applications. Just look for the Closing Market Report. I have some very sad news to share with you today. Friday, University of Illinois animal scientist, Professor Emeritus Doug Parrott passed away suddenly. He was just 71 years of age. I think of Dr. Parrott often when I'm driving on South First Street, past those icons of the University of Illinois campus, Memorial Stadium and State Farm Center. There, in a pasture, set the twin radio towers, which broadcast the AM 580 signal across a large swath of Illinois and Indiana. Beneath them, part of the university's Black Angus cattle herd graze. Doug Parrott was a legend in the beef cattle industry. He believed genetics were the key to better herds in the state and the nation. The last time I spoke with him for the radio was in February, just prior to the Illinois performance-tested bull sale. We talked about the sale, its history, and how it was intertwined with his career from nearly the very moment he entered the University of Illinois as a student. I hope you don't mind if I play a portion of that interview today to review something of Doug Parrott's life and work in his own words.
The actual question is, I started, enrolled as a freshman at the University of Illinois in the fall of 1969, but I was in graduate school in 1973, was when I first got in a car with two icons in animal science, Harry Russell and Dick Carlisle, and traveled with them to my first extension meeting.
IPT, the bull sale, was started in 1968, so you've been here for the bulk of it. How has it changed the landscape in the state for beef cattle production and around the nation?
Well, I think the main thing people have to remember, if they've looked at the bull sale today, it's not the same as it was in 1968. And that's a good thing. I mean, what we did in those early sales, and even as far back in the 50s, we had performance testing for beef cattle producers. In the simplest form, it was a way to take measurements and get objective data for your cattle operation. And from that evolved, we always knew that the biggest impact on a beef cow production enterprise was the bull, because he sired half the genetics for every calf, and then his daughters would be producing for years and years after that. And so the performance tested bull sale was basically started around the principle, how do we identify genetically superior beef breeding bulls with the goal of making beef production more efficient?
You said it's changed a great deal. What's changed?
Well, what's changed a great deal is, just like if you think about the capacity for measuring and keeping records back in the 60s and 70s, we had this great thing that was created called a computer. And it allowed us to store and analyze lots of records. And if we think about the early computers, I just spoke to a class the other day, and I showed them my thesis for my PhD that I got in 1979. And it was, I hired a person to type it for me. And they'd use the old whiteout to make corrections on it. Now, every one of our graduate students, of course, all of us in our society, we have spell check and ways to write documents and everything. That's just a raw example of measuring genetic stuff. So the performance sale, first it organized groups of people together in Illinois that already were better beef producers, but were allowed to take their production records and allow them to identify and then make available to the public, here are producers that have measured and identified superior genetics, and these are the cattle. But a quick journey through this performance testing was, in the 60s, we based all our performance records on just weighing cattle. How much beef did they produce over a specific period of time? In the 70s, and this is a time, Todd, when we had different breeds of cattle arriving in America from continental Europe, because we were transferring to larger, leaner, faster growing cattle. But we also developed expected progeny differences, or EPDs, which put, we were able to analyze and statistically look at lots and lots of different herd data, and then come up with a genetic predictor of how this animal's progeny or calves should perform compared to all other animals within the breed. And so we spent the decades of the 80s and the 90s not only measuring more traits, but improving our accuracy, building larger databases. So we were able to, the EPDs became the tool to make genetic predictions on what kind of beef was going to be produced. And then you could look and buy animals on every herd across the country and get genetic information on them and measure your herd performance on it. And so when we got to the 2000s, there was an explosion in the capacity of computers to where now beef organizations can actually provide genetic information that's updated on a daily basis for all purebred livestock where a producer participates in a performance program. And there aren't very many beef producers in purebred herds. You know, let me define purebred. A purebred is where a person produces known genetics and tries to produce superior genetics for commercially important traits. And a purebred breeder is expected to produce animals that have these identified genetics that are repeatable and measurable. So now we advanced. The biggest difference in our performance trait is we've expanded the data and information we provide on the bulls that are in the sale. We have bulls with a lot more traits that are measured, and the accuracy is grown much greater. So it's a risk management type of tool. And we have producers that can just be in a small herd or a big herd, but you still have a lot of genetic information you can provide prospective buyers.
How has it changed the herds across the nation?
The simplest example is, and this is kind of like how I would teach in beef class, you no longer just look at an animal and say, oh, that's a good one or that's a bad one. What you do is you look at their performance pedigree and all of their expected progeny difference, their EPDs, and now you can say, here is an animal that is designed to grow faster, have more marbling, have higher quality grades, have leaner meat, have a produce cattle that will milk more. And so without even looking at them, you see the shell of the animal, you know, genetically they're either above average or below average, or you can identify where they are in the population, and you can go in and select those cattle that give you the best chance to improve your own herd's efficiency of production. Well, we always ask buyers, before you come to look at a bull sale, make sure you understand what your herd needs. Maybe you need cattle that are bigger and growthier. Maybe you're in an area where you're grazing a lot, so you want more moderate sized cattle. You want cattle that'll calve easier, or cows that produce more milk, or cows that have more marbling or higher quality grade. Identify what you need to make animals produce better for your market, and then go look at bulls that have the genetics that fit what you need, and then make sure they phenotypically or physically are sound cattle that can go out and mate and breed and reproduce and do it functionally right too.
That was Dr. Doug Parrott from an interview recorded in February of this year. He passed away suddenly last Friday. His funeral details should be posted to the Owens funeral website in Champaign. And personally, I'll never forget traveling with the animal scientist a couple of decades ago now. And I think Doug would smile and laugh about this on what we affectionately called Manure Tour 1998 to explore how to improve manure management. We looked at an anaerobic digester in a pork producer's lagoon, composting chicken litter from large barns, pop-up flush systems in dairy barns, the new at the time DeKalb, Illinois, waste sewage processing system for humans, and small herd cattle manure disposal. Doug was teaching me the whole time. He was a brilliant professor, a gentle and kind man, and an icon of the nation's beef cattle industry. He's already missed. You may recall that last week, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack was in Leroy, Illinois, not very far from here in Champaign County, to tout some of the investments that are being made through the Inflation Reduction Act into blender pumps. There are grants available to install these. The Vice President of Fuels from Casey's General Store, Nathaniel Doddridge, was on site, and I asked him at the time about the importance of the grants and, more importantly, about the commitment of Casey's to ethanol.
When we see this type of commitment, it allows us to go make the significant investments in capital and go be able to take advantage of these types of grants.
This cost share of this grant, what does it mean? I mean, how much of the cost share is there? You'll get how much? How long does it take?
Yeah, so it's now at the 50-50, right? And so we're able to get as much as $5 million. Last time around, we got $4.9 million in grants, and so we solved higher blends at almost 80 stores last time. And so we'll target another 80 plus stores depending on how we can utilize those funds.
So you're at 400 stores now, you pick up another 80 out of 2,400?
Yep, and we're also opening new stores all the time, right? So we have, like I mentioned earlier, every new store that opens has higher blends. And so with this program plus new store growth, we'll be over 500 stores before too long.
Why has ethanol been a commitment for Casey's? Because it appears it has been.
Yeah, you go back and you look at the communities we serve, right? We are serving these small towns. 60% of the stores we operate in towns of 5,000 or less, normally surrounded in the Midwest by soybeans or corn or those farmers, right? And so this is just that natural relationship that works for us and has been really strong as we've looked to try to partner, try to move this fuel forward.
That was the Vice President of Fuels for Casey's General Store, Nathaniel Doddridge, talking about ethanol and blender pumps, E85, and other blends that you can find at more than 400 Casey stores across the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Let us turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Mark Russo is here from Everstream Analytics. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us on this Monday. Tell me about the weekend rainfall across the Midwest. This will help grain fill for corn and certainly will help the soybean crop in the western part of the Corn Belt.
Well, Todd, certainly rainfall came in a bit higher than expectations here, which for the driest areas in the western Midwest certainly has helped, although in general, it was a bit of a mixed bag. Areas of like central Iowa and southeast Minnesota received heavy rainfall, while portions of western Iowa, eastern Nebraska, southwest Minnesota missed out. So a bit of a mixed bag, but certainly the western belt is better off here compared to what was the case several days ago. And, you know, now these rains are moving into the central and eastern Midwest and helping to improve and maintain soil moisture, good soil moisture reserves here.
How much fell?
Yeah, in general, talking about amounts ranging anywhere from half to 1 inch on the lighter side to some localized areas getting 2, 3, even 4 inches of rain. Pretty localized on the higher side of things, but certainly quite significant in terms of coverage of amounts over that half of an inch.
What are your expectations for this coming week?
Yeah, this current rain event across the Midwest, again, will continue today and into tonight, but then the rest of the week does look dry across the Midwest. Now, do note that some of the rainfall today will come with some severe weather, especially in sections of Illinois and Indiana. But once this, rain event is done, drier weather for the rest of the week.
We probably should talk about some of the other growing regions across the planet. Start in Europe with the corn crop in France.
Yeah, France has started to turn more active in recent weeks, but these rains are coming too late to improve corn yield potential, which has been hit hard due to this summer's heat and dryness. Could be some early harvest delays here with some of the rain activity. Not expecting anything that major, but not only for France, but for much of Europe and their corn producing areas, the heat is basically done and it's more of a kind of a normal rainfall pattern for them.
And finally, what do we know about the forecast in South America?
Yeah, for Argentina, the highlight now is actually unseasonably cold temperatures the past couple of mornings. It's not out of the question. Some of their wheat got nipped because of the cold, but their crop is a little bit more behind schedule this year, so likely no widespread issues. Going forward, temperatures are going to be warming up, so no other cold shots are expected. And also no significant rain events are expected either. And Argentina certainly needs more rain to improve soil moisture, especially going into the upcoming growing season there coming up shortly.
Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He's with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find our daily agricultural programming to listen to on demand. Just click and play from the website or search us out in your favorite podcast applications, Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcast, Amazon Music, Google Podcast, and so very many more. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is produced and performed by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.